I'm glad this afternoon to direct our attention back to Jerry Bridges's? what's the plural of bridge? Bridges? Jerry Bridges' book, The Disciplines of Grace, and actually going back to pick up the subject that I introduced, it's already 3 weeks ago now, The Discipline of Watching. And this week I have not prepared a study guide along with this. Ask for your attention. And the central idea is the same as was presented 2 weeks ago that I'll give here. With the world, Satan, and the flesh arrayed against us, we must watch against the temptations that constantly beset us. We can effectively do so by knowing our enemy, knowing our weaknesses and strengths, and mounting a good offense, that is, by meditating on God's word and prayer. In the first segment on this study, I concentrated on the biblical warnings to be watchful against the world and the devil. And I briefly introduced you to the third that is typically in those scripture passages, the world, the devil, and the flesh. And it's that third one today that I'm going to elaborate on and look at scriptures that will help us to understand knowing ourselves and how to be watchful against the temptations that easily beset us. To introduce that, I remind you that when we looked at the first segment that we affirmed that as a believer that you do have a new identity. You are a child of God. The old man has been crucified with Christ so that you live with him, and yet the old man still lingers. The habits of habits of sin and temptation are still ones that cling to us. We are of a different character. Satan doesn't have dominion over you anymore, and the sinful nature is not your nature anymore. You have crossed over from death to life. But that old man does still exist and we fall into those temptations. I like the way Sinclair Ferguson puts it when he says that freedom from the dominion of sin is not the same thing as freedom from its presence and influence. But just to remind you that we were watchful because of that continued temptation and the continued aspect of how we can be have the presence and influence of sin around us. And Bridges used a very interesting analogy that was the analogy of a radar antenna. Do you remember what I said about a radar antenna? Did I get to the radar antenna? Maybe it's been so long ago. Did I get to that? I did? So how is our tendency to sin like an antenna? What do you use an antenna for? Should we ask our expert? Transmit or receive is what I have in mind, or by this analogy. And I'm familiar with antennas from the world of astronomy, where you might sometimes see these huge arrays of antennas that are directed just up to the open sky because they're listening for certain signatures that the stars put out on a radio frequency style. And there are certain studies that you can do because of that. And they're listening for and they're tuned in to those things. The sinful nature, Bridges' analogy goes like this, that he says that our flesh is always searching out opportunities like a radar antenna to gratify itself according to the particular sinful desires that each has, that each of us has. So that radar system has in mind the idea of constantly scanning the environment and looking for temptations for which it might respond. For the children, you might compare it to this. Have you ever noticed that, maybe the parents will know this too, that when your parents open up a bag of chocolate, it has a certain sound, doesn't it? And it doesn't matter where in the house that you are, it always seems like you can hear it.
This is very true.
Maybe the parents notice it more, or are more aware of it than the children are, because you open up a bag of chocolate and all of a sudden the kids are around. But if you open up the dryer and start folding laundry, they're nowhere to be found. It's because your antenna is tuned to something different. And it's the desires of the flesh, the sinful desires, which are part of our own makeup, are tuned in to opportunity. They can hear the bag of chocolate being opened. And they're always, in a sense, searching for that opportunity to express itself. So, just for instance, someone who wrestles with the sin of laziness has an antenna that is tuned towards procrastination. It's tuned towards putting off what you know needs to be done in favor of, oh, there's a movie I want to watch tonight. Well, I think what you might find is that it may be that's the antenna that speaks very loudly for you, and that you need to know yourself and need to know that this is one of the things that expresses itself in your life that you need to be aware of. And there are other ways. So let me just throw out some sins and have you suggest things that might the sinful tendencies are attuned to and how it might express itself. So what about the sin of pride? What might pride be tuned in towards?
Looking for ways to showcase yourself. Or...
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Compliments, insults.
Mm-hmm. Interestingly, both sides. You're tuned in to those who say something good about you, and those who say something poorly about you.
Or using insults to boost yourself.
Okay, that's very good, yeah. So you might put others down so that you look up or look better. You might be tuned into the fact that somebody didn't compliment you. They might not say anything about you, but you could take offense because they didn't notice what you did. And your pride could be offended. That's your radar seeking that out. What about anger? That may have a better a root that might be better to identify. What about selfishness? Do you know what selfishness is?
Being mean.
It can be being mean. That's part of it. But being mean so that I get my way.
Not sharing.
Yeah. Not sharing the things that you have, but always demanding that other people share their things with you. That's a familiar game, mm-hmm, I know around our house.
Selfishness and probably be tuned in to anyone's treated better than you. So
yeah.
Any inequity you can see.
Yeah.
Even if it might be not quite accurate.
Your antenna can distort what is actually there, right? And make
digital
it
enhancement.
A digital enhancement, yeah. Make it seem to be a slight when there wasn't a slight. Or maybe selective. You only heard part of what was going on and interpreted that to be a slight against you. I know that the CY has talked about the issue of lust. This is an antenna that is out there that will seek opportunity for sinful sexual desire to be pleased, to gratify itself. You can do that with a number of different sins, and the point being that you need to know yourself and need to know what temptations are part of your makeup and your approach to life. I'd like to look at several verses and just elaborate on knowing yourself in several different ways. These ways are what I'm going to look at. You need to know areas of weakness, areas of strength, and know yourself in the little things of daily life. And fourthly, areas of Christian liberty. So let's look at areas of weakness. Would somebody look up Job 31:1? Okay, Jeff, Job 31:1.
I have made a covenant with my eyes. Why then should I look upon a young woman?
Job is speaking here about sexual temptation, and he describes very deliberately covenanting with his eyes about what he would look at. He says, I won't look at a maiden. I won't look at a virgin. These areas of weakness might come from your own history. It might come from your own temperament. God has given us different personalities, and those personalities might be prone towards different things. You might have a propensity towards laziness or pride aspects of negative thinking that are part of just what your temperament is. They might also come from your profession. When you work in certain areas, there may be times when there is pressure applied on you that might accentuate that temperament or personality. That calls for a time of studying yourself and just understanding what your vulnerabilities are. An army that goes into battle will make an assessment of where are we weak? Where might the enemy attack us? And because of that, would shore up those areas of weakness so that the defenses would be strong. Having said that, you might be surprised that the second area that you need to know yourself is in the area of strength. You still need to know about the temptations and tendencies, even in those areas where you are strong. Would someone look up 2 Corinthians 12, 9 and 10, Sam?
But he said to me, my grace is sufficient for you, for my power is made perfect in weakness. Therefore, I will boast all the more gladly of my weaknesses, so that the power of Christ may rest upon me. For the sake of Christ, then, I am content with weaknesses, insults, hardships, persecutions, and calamities. For when I am weak, then I am strong.
I meant to go a little earlier in that passage. You might remember that passage too, because there Paul talks about being given a thorn in the flesh. Do you remember why he speaks of that thorn in the flesh? If you have
so he wouldn't boast in his own strength?
That's right. Paul was strong, and he was used by God in marvelous ways. There would have been a number of opportunities for Paul to be able to look at accomplishments or look at strengths, and then to fall into temptation and to sin because of the strengths that he had. Instead, he learned to rejoice in his weaknesses so that that he could see the strength of God being manifested. There's also just the point that Bridges makes very well, that you might have safeguards that you have put in place around you, but still be surprised in an area that you think you might have all of your defenses set up. Bridges tells the story of a man who lived lived his life very carefully, and in the area of sexual temptation had put in place just a number of practices so that he would be protected from being tempted, the safeguards that he had set up. But then, seemingly out of the blue, was propositioned directly by someone and fell into temptation and followed that. So an area of strength that he thought, I don't need to worry about this, but then was not watchful and did fall. Thirdly, being watchful in the little things of everyday life. And the passage that I've chosen for this is Psalm 101, verses 3 and 4. Rachel?
I will set nothing wicked before my eyes. I hate the work of those who fall away. It shall not cling to me. A perverse heart shall depart from me. I will not know wickedness.
That whole psalm is something of David's covenant with God. Just these two verses mention a couple of things. It says, I won't put anything wicked before my eyes. He talks about not letting slander, or one who does slander or gossip in his presence. And the psalm goes on in a similar fashion to describe several other things. Life really is made up of a lot of little things, a lot of little decisions that are part of our daily life. And we can let those slide sometimes. We can think, oh, that's nothing. I don't need to be concerned there. But sure enough, those little things mount up or provide the gateway for something else. Bridges here again is helpful. He uses the sexual temptation again as an illustration of this. He says we seldom have to say no to an outright temptation to adultery. We often have to say no to the temptation to the lustful look or thought. He that despises little things shall fall little by little. His point is that the sin of adultery you might define narrowly as a man and a woman who are married to someone else sleeping together, and you could say, well, I'm not tempted to do that. But the sin of adultery, as Jesus talks about in the Sermon on the Mount, is still broken by the lustful look. We might say, well, that's a little thing. It's not as grievous as the actual act of adultery, that's true. But don't be fooled. It is still sinful, and it is still dangerous. So be watchful over the little things. And the final area that he encourages watchfulness is in the area of Christian liberty. This is Bridges' leadership here, and I probably wouldn't have turned here unless Bridges had commented on this, but it really is a fascinating passage. Looks like you're turning there, JD. Would you read 1 Corinthians 8, 7 through 13?
Yep. However, there is not in everyone that knowledge. For some, with conscientiousness of the idol, until now eat it as a thing offered to an idol, and their conscience, being weak, is defiled. But food does not commend us to God, for neither if we eat are we better, nor if we do not eat are we the worse. But be aware, lest somehow this liberty of yours becomes a stumbling block to those who are weak. For if anyone sees you who have knowledge eating in an idol's temple, will not the conscience of him who is weak be emboldened to eat those things offered to idols? And because of your knowledge shall the weak brother perish, but for whom Christ died? But when you thus sin against the brethren and wound their weak conscience, you sin against Christ. Therefore, if food makes my brother stumble, I will never again eat meat, lest I make my brother stumble.
Good example of the complexity of Paul's writing with a lot of different ins and outs there. What he's talking about is the situation in Corinth was that the place where you go to get meat was typically associated with a temple, an idol's temple. The meat that was for sale would have come from the sacrifices there. The question was, so can you eat that meat? The strict answer that Paul gives is that an idol isn't anything. And you can, with clear conscience, you can eat that. But there were some that said, but it came from an idol. And it's defiled. And by their conscience, their conscience was bound to not eat that. And the question that he brings out here is, how do you get along a brother who has a conscience free to eat and a brother whose conscience is bound not to eat? And he says, don't let your Christian liberty lead you astray. It can lead you astray in a couple of different ways. It can go in the direction of pride, and you can kind of flaunt that liberty. It might be a case where you think you're strong, but then it leads you into something that you didn't expect. But more than that, there's the corporate nature. You know yourself, but you need to know yourself in context with everybody else. We are a covenant people, and as such, we have a relationship with each other. And Paul says to modify your liberty so that you don't lead someone else astray. The ultimate issue is that you do have liberty and you can maintain that, and there's a time and a place to maintain that, but there's also a time and a place for you to say, I won't do that for the sake of my brother. And Christians of an earlier generation, I think, probably did go too far in the fundamental Christian movement of drawing up just a set of do's and don'ts. They lived the Christian life by these rules, and they were pretty strict in doing that. It does seem like, as a reaction to that, that many Christians have said, "Well, no, that's not what Christianity is about," and we have liberty in those areas, but in asserting those liberties, it seems like there's been a pressing of that liberty to the point of sometimes seeing how far they could go, and then sometimes even getting caught up to indulging the desires of this world. Galatians 5:13 says, "You, my brothers, were called to be free. Do not use your freedom to indulge the sinful nature, but rather serve one another in love." So let me give an example of this. You're free to eat bacon. Bacon is our favorite example, isn't it? I heard a lot of amens there, and there were some head noddings. But you're not free to gluttony. Right? God says you're free to eat. So this is This is a food that's now clean. But you're not free to overeat or to overindulge. And that's something to be watchful over. You're free to drink, but not to drunkenness. You're free to enjoy entertainment or sports, but not to the point that you forsake other responsibilities. These are areas of freedom that can become sinful in either overindulgence or in forgetfulness. To conclude then, watchfulness over yourself really leads you back to a watchfulness for Christ, and especially for Christ's return. I'll close by reading several verses from Revelation, because our watchfulness is not just an end in and of itself, that we would watch ourselves. Our purpose is that we would be ready for Christ's second coming, right? So our watchfulness is for that expectation that we have of being with Christ. These are Jesus' words to the church in Sardis. To the angel of the church in Sardis write, "The words of him who has the seven spirits of God and the seven stars. I know your works. You have the reputation of being alive, but you are dead. Wake up and strengthen what remains and is about to die. For I have found your works, I have not found your works complete in the sight of my God. Remember then what you have received and heard. Keep it and repent. If you will not wake up, I will come like a thief, and you will not know at what hour I will come against you." There's warning in that watchfulness, warning in the sense of being ready for Christ's second coming, and so that we would not be judged. But there's a positive side too. We are watchful like the bride waiting for the groom on the wedding day. And there's anticipation and a good watchfulness that is implied by that as well. So the discipline of watchfulness is set in front of you to especially know yourself. Weaknesses, strengths, little things, and Christian liberty. Any questions? So can you eat bacon?
Mm-hmm.
Good.